Alicia Adams, Reel 3. Yes, you were saying...
The German strike to demoralize us, because I remember there was a song which someone wrote in the Yarmouth consultation camp. And they had a little boy sing it in front of the group which was going out to work. And it went, if I can still remember it after all those years, you know. And it said, on the sand you will go to sleep, and your penis will stand. No, it said like that. It said, you have to make love to your mother. Because tomorrow you will be dead and your penis will stand on the sand. And that song somehow was written on my soul. I remembered it for so many years. And they made this little boy sing that song. Amazing, really, when you think back on these things. And I worked like that, I think, for about half a year. Then I remember one day we were coming back in a column, and one German soldier heard that his family was shot in Köln, I think. And he just took a gun and he started shooting at us. And we didn't understand what it was all about, you know. Nobody was running. And quite a lot of people were shot. I remember, like, then suddenly people started running, you know. And then we got a word from Poldek's parents. We used to go to Poldek's parents about every 2 weeks to be the Gestapo. And we got a word from them that there was a talk of liquidation, that they were going to close this Beskiden camp. And Mr. Weiss said to us that if he sends us a word, that we should immediately go to the Gestapo, to his place. And always when we came there, every Sunday, we used to all work at night. We started digging in the room where they all slept. They cut out, they had the parquet floor there, and they cut out it in such a way that it made a top to a hiding place. And then one day he said we should come and we should start working on the Gestapo, we should start working in the garden. But his other son, Poldek, and I, we went, but his other son didn't want to go. I think he had a girlfriend at the time. I can't remember why he didn't join us, but he stayed in Beskiden, and the Beskiden was liquidated. They were all taken away. I don't think at the time they were shot. They were taken to Auschwitz, because this boy survived, but he survived going through all the other concentration camps. Poldek and I, we went to his parents, and we started working there. We were helping to dig this hiding place. They all knew at the time that this was already the end. The Russians were coming. The Russians were on the border of Poland. And unfortunately, they stopped there for 6 months. But at that time, people thought that they were coming any time. So the Germans decided to kill everybody. And one day we heard how they were jumping over the fence. And we all opened this hiding place. I forgot to tell you that we had dug there under the room. We dug a whole room. And the builders have reinforced the walls. And they made a toilet there, they put there a wireless, and they dried every food they possibly could and they put it there. And they, for air, they made like a corridor and a hole under commandant of the Gestapo balcony, they put a bucket with a hole, and that's what was giving the air to the hiding place. And when we heard that they have surrounded us, we all started running to this place, and half of us managed to get in. The other half was rounded up and caught. We heard them all on the top. One of the women had the presence of mind. She had pepper, and she put pepper on the top of the hiding place. And they were looking for us for 3 days. They knew we were there. And just started tearing down the floor when the commandant came with his dog. And the dog smelled the pepper, and the dog went away, and they stopped looking for us. They thought maybe we all ran away before. So we stayed there. We stayed there for a week, and there were enormous rats running around. Mr. Weiss, though, he was negotiating with a Ukrainian who was what is called a Volksdeutsche. A Volksdeutsche were Ukrainians who told the Germans that they were of German origin, and for that they were very privileged. They were getting extra ration, and they were getting, I don't know really what kind of privileges they were getting under the Germans, but they were getting privileges. And when he heard that the Russians are coming back, he was very much afraid. So he thought if he hides some Jews, it will be in his favor. And at the same time, he was charging so and so much per head of every Jew. I had the diamond which my mother hid me. And that diamond paid for me, and it paid for Paul de Gweis. And so at night, we managed to climb out through that hole under the Gestapo officer. And we went through Drohobycz, because he lived sort of on the outskirts where there were peasants. He was a peasant, that Ukrainian. And he hid us in the cellar. He had already about 15 people, Jewish people, hidden there. And he called us rabbits, because he had us in the cellar. And in the evening, he would call the rabbits out and give us some food, you see. So in the meantime, the Russians unfortunately stopped on the border of Poland, and they were not moving any further. The Germans were, however, running away, and they needed straw. At one time, he became very frightened that Ukrainian, that they will find us in his house and he will be shot. So what he did, he had a shed with straw in. So he put us in the shed, because then he could pretend that he didn't know that we came there, you see. And the Germans were coming, and they were taking the straw away. So then he became even more frightened. He put us back into the cellar, and one night we heard him talking with the wife, and they were thinking how to murder us, because they were afraid. And so the wife said to him, "How are you going to kill them?" So he said, "Well, I'm killing all the animals. I can kill a sheep and I can kill a cow. It can't be so difficult to kill a man as well. I can cut their throat." But somehow he was afraid to do it, you know. And we were lucky. We stayed there, I think, for about 3 months. And then the Russians came in. But the people who stayed under the Gestapo, they stayed there, and there was a mistress of one of the Gestapo men, a Polish woman, who started living there, and she heard noises at night. And she called in her brother, and her brother managed to find the hiding, and he went there. He was blackmailing them, and after they gave him everything they had, he gave them to the Germans, and I think they were shot about a week before the Russians came. It was really a terrible tragedy. So,
that Russians must have been a very difficult time, wasn't it, towards the end, when you knew that the Russians were so near, and yes. yet hearing the plan that you might be murdered. Was that a very difficult time
for
you?
Well, it was very traumatic and very difficult, but nevertheless, we were already in hiding, and we could already hear the Russians coming and the Germans running away. And whatever it was, you see, we were so happy that the Germans were being defeated that we didn't think of ourselves so much. I must say the hatred in my soul was very strong to the Germans, and I wanted very much to see them defeated. After the war, the Weiss family took a flat, which I think it belonged really to my mother's cousin. My mother had a cousin who was an accountant. And he managed to survive as well. And he was a bachelor. Now, the Weiss family, Paulvig Weiss had a sister who was not married. And I think the parents wanted very much to marry her to my father's cousin. Anyway, he took a flat. I think it was his flat. I can't really remember. It was quite a nice flat in a nice part of the Hobbit. And we all lived together there. And we lived there for about 6 months. And I went back to school, but I found that I couldn't learn at all. Just like before the war, I was an excellent student in history. I mean, you could ask me any date or any event, and I just knew it. After the war, I just couldn't concentrate on anything. And I lived with the Weiss family. I was not married to Paul de Weiss. I was aware of it. This was still a time. Number one, I didn't really understand anything. I was only 16. He got me pregnant, and I had it aborted by a gynecologist in Drohovic. His parents were very nice to me, but I was not their daughter. My place somehow was not a place. I was really treated like a little servant, but she was very nice to me. She was an old lady, and she couldn't really do things much, so I was helping her. Then we were told that we could either stay in the Ukraine and become Ukrainian, or we should go to the part which was given to Poland in turn for the Ukraine. And they decided that they wanted to leave. They didn't want to stay under Russian occupation. So we all went with my father's cousin. We went in tracks for the cattle, and the Russian soldiers were coming back to Russia. So our train was always put on a different track, and it took us a month to come to the other side of Poland. We didn't have much food with us, so wherever we stopped, we used to go in the fields and steal some potatoes and bake them, and that's how we survived. And then we arrived to this place, Balczych, which was in the mountain. It was a sort of, I think they were coal mining town in the mountains. And Mr. Weiss started working as a tailor. He could earn immediately money. He even did that in Drohobycz as well, because he was a very good tailor. And my mother's cousin went to live in a different town with his best friend and the best friend's wife. And he said to me that if I should be ever very unhappy with the Weiss family, that I should come to him. And about that time, the Weiss family decided that I should marry Poldek. They were going to Canada. And they thought that it would be better if we got married. And the wedding was supposed to be in about 3 weeks' time. I must admit that at that time I suddenly became very frightened. I realized that I did not really love old advice. And the idea of spending the rest of my life with him did not appeal to me. And I left and I went to my cousin in a town called Jerzonu. And Poldek Weiss came after me and he gave me a good hiding. Maybe I deserved it, considering it was 3 weeks before the wedding that I did it anyway.
That must have been a very difficult time for you, your relationship with him. Was it...
It was a very difficult time because I really didn't understand. I didn't understand my motives. I didn't understand his motives. I didn't understand his family. It never occurred to me that they let their son live with me for so many years without marrying us together. It was only when my cousin in Paris met Mrs. Weiss somewhere, and Mrs. Weiss complained that I left her son, and my cousin's wife said to her, but she was not married to your son, you see. Only then that I realized that all that time I was in a very strange position, and being so completely alone, without any education, without any knowledge of the world, because I really didn't have any knowledge of the world, you know. I was a little girl when I lost my parents, and I was a little girl when I was in concentration camp. And in concentration camp, there were no moral obligations or morality. Everything went. Anything that could save your life went. So I didn't really understand anything. But my parents were very nice, decent people, and I came from a very long line of professional people and rabbis, and I think maybe it was an inborn idea. I knew that something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was really. So I left Poldek at that time, and I stayed with my father's cousin for about 2 months.
And that would still have been in this part of Poland, which had come from Germany, is that right?
Yes.
What was the situation like there when you arrived? Because after all, the Germans would have been moved into Germany, wouldn't they?
The Germans went to Germany and they left the flats. So the flats of the Germans were given to the people who came from the Ukraine. So the Weiss family got a very nice flat. And my cousin also had quite a nice flat in Jerzonu with his best friend. And His best friend was a very charming man, and it was very funny how the two men tried to bring me up at that time. But I also didn't feel that I had anywhere to be, really. And I found that people were very nasty. They really thought that I was the mistress of my father's cousin because I was living there, yes. And then one day I went to Wałbrzych. I wanted to buy myself the material to make myself a blouse. And my husband, he had a shop with materials. And he was wearing a uniform, and he was very nice to me. And he asked me for a date. And we went out together. And I only knew him for 3 months. And he asked me to marry him. And at the same time, When I was with my cousin, I started looking for my family, which I knew was in London. And we found my mother's sister and her husband and the daughter. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm talking too loud.
No, it was that speaking.
Well, they said that they were sending a rabbi from London, Rabbi Shenfield, who was coming to take all the Jewish orphans to England. And they managed to get papers for me to come to England. And I went to Warsaw with my husband, and I met this Rabbi Shenfield. But when my husband was in the army, he was the secretary of Rabbi Kahane, who was the chief rabbi of the Polish army. And my husband started persuading me that I should stay with him and I should marry him and I should not go with this transport of the children to England. Rabbi Shenfield, I remember, he called me in and he was talking to me. He asked me if I really wanted to marry my husband or wouldn't I be better if I came to England. And I said, no, I'd rather marry my husband. And so they arranged the wedding at the house of Rabbi Kahane. Warsaw was at the time completely down to the ground. There were two houses standing. One was for the Polish army, the headquarters of the Polish army, and the other one was where big dignitaries of the Polish army were living, and Rabbi Kahane had a small flat in the second house. And Mrs. Kahane gave me her veil, and we went to town. Well, there was no town, no houses, only a street of prefabricated shops. And we bought like a jacket, striped jacket, and we bought champagne, which was beautifully corked. When we opened it, it was pure water. And she baked a few cakes, Mrs. Kahane. And Rabbi Thorn, that's the one who wrote this book. I was on his wedding when I was 7, but he officiated at my wedding as well because he also worked for Rabbi Kahane. Rabbi Kahane became, after the war, the chief rabbi of the Polish aviation. And later on, he became a chief rabbi, I think, either Brazil or Argentina, I'm not sure. And he was passing through London and he was asking whether we are still married. I think what I found in my husband was the fact that he lost completely his family. He was also as alone as I was. So I think that's what we had in common. And we both wanted to leave Poland because we were being very much brainwashed. It was still the communist country. and we were young and vulnerable, and we believed that people should be equal, that people should not be one rich and one very poor. The idea was very beautiful. But nevertheless, I remembered my parents before the war, how they lived, and I didn't really want to stay in a Polish communist country. And Rabbi Kahane was very nice to us, and he got us papers to go to Venezuela. But I really wanted to go only to Israel. And we came to Paris, we got all the papers to go to Israel. And then I became so terribly ill. I started vomiting and having those terrible pains. And as I was only 17 years old, nobody believed me. Or every doctor I went to told me to have a baby. They said, yes, they didn't believe me, really. But my aunt from London wrote to me that she had a Polish doctor from Drohobycz who was her closest friend, and she said I should come to London and he will probably find out what is wrong with me. So I couldn't get a visa because we had a visa only for 3 months in Paris. It was a transitory visa. And in order to come to England, I needed a visa for 6 months. So my husband was working, was learning to make ties at the time. And he was working with a lady whose husband was an officer in the French army. And he knew someone in the foreign office in Paris. And this gentleman gave me a visa for 6 months, and I came to visit my aunt in London. And Dr. Chomet was very nice to me, but he didn't really know what was wrong with me. But I went once to a dinner somewhere, and I met a gentleman who was working for the Jewish organization. His name was Mr. Quester. And he asked me what was my husband doing, and I told him that my husband was learning to make shirts, and he also was learning, in those days, I don't know if you remember, there was a nylon shirt just came out on the market. And they didn't know in England how to make a certain stiffening to a shirt. And my husband was learning that in France. And he said, if your husband can do that, then I can get you a visa to England, permanent visa, which was in those days almost an impossibility. And I said, yes, he can do that. That's just what he's been training at. And he got us the visa at that time. He got a firm who was making shirts, and he got my husband a job making these stiffenings for the collar. And that's how we came to England. That was 1950.
Did you speak English at that time when you came?
I spoke English a little. My father studied in America, and during the war he was, because there wasn't much to do, in the evening he was teaching me English. But I spoke with a very American accent, but very little. I really couldn't speak English. My husband is very bright. He started working in the East End in this factory, and he didn't speak any English at all, and yet within 3 months he was already managing the whole factory without speaking English. But I went straight away to the school and I learned English here. husband only learned English from listening to the radio or cinema. That was the only way he learned English.